Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I'm your host. As we've gone through the year of 2025, I put out a call to ask people to come and tell their stories. I had this moment where I just really felt like being human was the important thing to talk about. How does it feel to sense the humanness in your body? I've been doing some breath work activities on Monday night with my students and, you know, saying to them, you're the only person throughout all of time and space that is feeling the sensations that you're feeling in your body, whether that's the lifting and lowering of your chest as your lungs fill and as you exhale, whether it's feeling your own hamstring in triangle pose, that there's something really precious, really intimate about feeling your own body. And that as we move into this time of AI and machines and robots, that this interoceptive awareness of what's going on inside of us will define us. And that this proprioceptive awareness, how do we interface with the world out there? And what are the sensations we as humans feel when we have the sunshine on our face? Or this morning I went out to feed the birds and it was just 63 degrees and beautiful sunrise. And I just felt the crispness in the air here in Minnesota. You know, that was a very human experience. And so all of our stories for the first half of the year, and we have a ton more for the second half of the year, have been all about how does it feel to be human and what are some of the sufferings and the struggles that we as humans have? And then how have we used yoga, yoga therapy, Ayurveda to help us kind of come back from those struggles and feel again and be again and find joy again? So we've been doing that this whole season, and I think it's going really well. Every single guest that comes and graciously, generously, courageously tells their story, I have just felt so attuned. I hope you have too. I think to come and speak your truth is like a really big deal. And I know that for a lot of the people we've had in season 8 from January to July of 2025, like they've never told their story before. They're coming out big. They're going straight from being secret, being scared, not wanting to share themselves with the world, all the way to, you know what, I'm ready to be authentic, to speak my truth, and to shine, to let my true authentic self come forward. So I hope you'll go back, if you haven't already, and listen to so many stories. We probably had 25 stories the first half of this year, and all of the precious people, and I thank you if you're listening, that have come to, you know, basically help us understand what it means to be human, what it means to suffer, how we can suffer less, and how yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda have helped us to suffer less, how we came out of our suffering, especially when nothing else really was helping. So that leads us into season 9, which now we're beginning, probably starting in August. We'll start the second half of the year. And believe it or not, we have so many people now willing to tell their stories. I put out these little ads like, hey, come tell your story. We are booked up until the end of the year. So I don't have more room for stories. A lot of Thursdays, I'm doubling up. I'm doing 2 stories because so many people have been so willing. And I'm really grateful for all of you that have come forward and are willing to do that. And I have to not take on more people for the second half of the year because we're very full, and I'm so grateful for that. And at the end of the year, we'll go into another new thing that I'm dreaming up. You all know I'm about 6 to 9 months ahead of what's coming out on the podcast. I'm plotting it and planning it and feeling it and being it to prepare. So pretty much for the last 4 months, I've been really feeling into what it is that I want to help bring forward into the world coming up in January 2026. And at the end of today, I'll give you a hint about that at the end. But for now, I want to stay with what it means to be human, what it means to tell our story, especially in the second half of 2025. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host, and I wanted to tell you about something very special that we do as a community on Monday nights. Every Monday night for several years now, we've had a community of people that comes together and we do a little Dharma talk where we talk about a Yoga Sutra as it pertains to being human and suffering less and getting good daily routines or finding deeper relationships or having more emotional intelligence. So we start off every Monday night with a little lecture and discussion, and then we go into about 4 or 5 gentle postures. We come back and do a couple of breath work, pranayama techniques, and then we go into a deep meditation for about 25 minutes. Oftentimes it's a yoga nidra meditation or a guided visualization, but it's a really special time. And then we finish off each Monday night for those that would like to stay a little bit longer. And we talk about the theory of why we did what we did, and we give continuing education credits for that. So our Monday nights are wonderful, and we would love to see you there. In August of 2025, we're going to be talking about managing anxiety, stress, and insomnia. They have the same roots, managing anxiety, stress, and insomnia with yoga. So if you can join us in August, we would love to see you with us for Monday nights. You can see the link to sign up in the show notes. Let me tell you a story. So yesterday, I'm filming this on Monday, July 7th, 2025. Yesterday, I went to the Tibetan American Association here in Minnesota. It is out in this beautiful, beautiful place, you know, kind of about an hour or more out from the city. It looks like you're in the Himalayas. It literally has these beautiful rolling hills. It has flowers. It's green. It's lush. And it's just when you go out there, you just feel like you're in a whole nother land. And so I went out for the Dalai Lama's 90th birthday party. And I guess Minnesota is the second largest place for Tibetans to live next to New York. New York is number one, Minnesota is number two. You cannot imagine how many people were at this celebration for the 90th year of the Dalai Lama, and may he live on for many, many more years. I was there for about 5 hours. I was a guest of a friend. I was probably one of 4 non-Tibetan people there, and I felt so honored to be invited and to be a special guest and get to basically have an inside look at people who were celebrating their culture, celebrating what it means to be human, looking at their values, their beliefs, their rituals. I really felt like it was a sacred experience to get to be part of this energy. And what I came away with, I mean, many of you know that the Tibetan people have been exiled from their home. And so many of them live in India, but also have come to the United States and all over the world because they're exiled. And they're a nomadic culture, like in their blood, in their bones, in their DNA, because they've not had a home, they're nomadic. And so there were the celebrations on the inside of the building, which were phenomenal. I can tell you all about it. But what's also interesting is that big groups of families, multi-generational families, were all around the building, and each of them had a tent. And I would guess there were several hundred tents, and these were big tents. You could fit maybe 20 or more people under a tent. So there would be a family of origin with multiple generations. That family would have prepared beautiful, beautiful food for everyone to come. They were sitting on the ground, playing cards, laughing, talking. It was just so beautiful to see the generations of people and that each person was part of a sacred pact of family. And, you know, the Tibetan people are so humble and so grateful to be here. You know, oftentimes when we are oppressed It makes us angry. It makes us resentful. It makes us want to lash out and tell everybody how much we're hurting. It makes us want to be in the trauma of it all. But that's not what I saw from the Tibetan people. I saw people that were tough as nails, but they were also humble and gracious and generous and kind and compassionate. And that combination of being so strong and so tough, but also so kind and generous, it was just a really magnificent thing to see. I don't think I've ever seen it before. On one hand, the speakers were talking about how the exile of their people from China is not okay and how it is oppressive, it is wrong. And they were using very, very strong words. And then on the other hand, there was this joyful, kind, humble sweetness in the room. And I really love that combination. I was reflecting that I think they have it figured out what it means to be human. And so we were walking around and there was all of these tents of different families. And of course, I didn't know most of them. The person who had invited me knew a lot of people, and everyone was so friendly and gracious and offering food and coming out and talking and wanting to know more about us. It was a really lovely experience. And I just thought that's the best of humanity. That's what we as humans have potential to be. And then on the inside of the hall, the arts and the music and the dancing and the colors and the huge birthday cake for the Dalai Lama, which, by the way, is made of barley flour and tastes nothing like a cake, as one of my friends said. And I apologize if this doesn't sound very nice, but it tastes a little bit like sawdust. And that wasn't to say it's negative. It literally does taste like that because in Tibet, barley is one of the things that grows most fervently. And so, although there was a little bit of sweetness to it, the cakes are made of barley, and that's how it is. And it was so thick and so hard, like the knife, they had trouble cutting it. You know, you had to put your full weight on the knife to get it to go down through the barley cake. And so, you know, when you're expecting some kind of delicious, soft white cake or something, it was just very different to the tongue. And so, still wonderful. But just to say that for 5 hours, we watched people dancing and singing in their traditional attire, and elderly women that came and did this beautiful dance in a circle. And those elderly women have been doing that together for 30 years, like those same women. The children laughing and playing and joking. Not one child had an iPhone in their hand, not one child. They were interacting with each other. The children were sitting in circles, looking across from each other and playing and romping around and tackling and playing, you know, all sorts of games. I saw circles of young women, like 4 or 5 young girls who were like somewhere between 9 and 13, mentoring and talking to each other and being so sweet to each other. It was really an amazing sight to kind of see the potential of humans, and also how the Tibetans have been able to preserve their culture, even though they have been very, very open to the Western world. And they are continuously thanking America and everywhere else they've landed because they're so gracious and thankful for good government relations. They honor the mayors of many, many towns nearby to basically say, thank you for letting us be here. And as I said, the focus was on what can we build going forward together? How can we be on good terms? How can we be good citizens? It wasn't on the anger of being exiled. And while I know we need compassion and we need people to hear us and see us when we've been hurt, we also have to move forward. And I think the Tibetan people have done a beautiful job of this. Another really amazing thing is that the Dalai Lama has just put out his 110th book. That's what I think I heard. I think I heard the word 110. I bought a copy of it. And the book is called The Voice for the Voiceless. So I haven't even gotten into it yet because this was just yesterday, but just the title, wow, The Voice for the Voiceless. That is amazing. So as I looked around this beautiful celebration, I just realized how far some of us and some of our society has come from what it means to be human, that we are interconnected. We are dependent on each other. We are not isolated beings. We have to work to be humble. We have to work to be kind and compassionate. We have to look at our flaws and try to do better. We have to be of service to each other. We need to spend time together relaxing and playing and smiling and laughing and eating. We need to put down the phones. So all of this ties back into the yoga therapy hour and what it means to be human, because what we're seeing in season 7 and 8 is my hope that we will all remember what it means to be human. Please take a moment with me to go and listen to something a little different, and then we'll get right back to the guest. Many times, as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, or even moms, dads, grandparents, we wonder what's happening with our loved one in between the times we're seeing them. Whether your child went off to college or whether you're a yoga therapist who only sees your client once a month, you might wonder, how are they doing? Well, here at the Optimal State, we have developed a mobile app where people can track how they're feeling mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually at different times of day, seasons of the year. And basically, you can see the data. You can see how your 6 to 10 a.m. slot in your day looks and how you usually feel at that time versus your 2 to 6 p.m. How do you feel at that time of the day? And you can see the patterns. You can set a week, a month, a season, and get the aggregate data so you can see what your pattern is. Where do you tend to go out of balance? And the cool thing is, you can just take a screenshot of that summary and send it off to your yoga teacher, your yoga therapist, your parent, your child. It's a really great way to check in. And I think especially for maybe kids that don't want to call their parents all the time from school, they could just show their parent the data, like, okay, I'm doing all right. Here, look at my data for the last 2 weeks. Screenshot, boom, it's yours. Now you can settle down and stop calling me. It could be that, or it could be that your child is not doing well, but they don't know how to say that to you, or maybe your client. So your client could take a screenshot of their data from the last week and send it to you as they come into the session, so you kind of have an idea of what's going on with them. So there's many ways to use it. And in addition, there are wonderful interventions that help people to come into balance. So I hope you'll consider checking out on the App Store. It's called Optimal State App. You just type that in, Optimal State App, and check it out. It's free for the first few weeks, so you have nothing to lose from trying it out and checking out how to track, how to get your aggregate data, how to send that off, and then hopefully how to get some interventions. All right, now let's go back to our guest. And, I was reading an article earlier from Stanford Business. I just want to read a quote out of it. This is by Benoit Monin, a professor of organizational behavior at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Humanity has always seen itself as unique in the universe. When the contrast was to animals, we pointed out our use of language and reason and logic and defining traits. So, what happens when the phone in your pocket is suddenly better at all of these things? Language, reason, logic. What happens when the phone in your pocket is better at all of these things? And I think that's so interesting as we head into the time of AI where everything is at our fingertips. We have access to the universal mind basically 24/7 with the click of a button. This is not to say we shouldn't use AI for things that it is really helpful in saving us time. And, it is the future. We have to admit that to ourselves. We will be completely lost if we don't start to adopt it. But it shouldn't replace what I experienced yesterday at the Tibetan American Association, TAFAM is what it's called. It can't replace. Looking down at our phones cannot replace the arts, the music, the dancing, the laughing, the singing, the chanting. Oh my gosh, the Buddhist monks were chanting in that really, really low tone for an hour and a half, and all of the people were chanting with. It was just such a beautiful meditative experience to hear thousands of people chanting along, all knowing the same chants. Like, our phones aren't going to replace that. I think as we move into the age of AI, things like yoga therapy, and Ayurveda will become even more important because we're here to help people feel what it means to be human. We're here to be with one another, to feel one another, to see, to hear, understand one another. That's what we do as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, Ayurvedic practitioners. We help connect people back to themselves so that they can come into balance and feel good more of the time. And therefore, they can be of service to humanity and they can connect with other people. It's really hard to connect with other people when you're just not feeling very well yourself. Your world becomes very small, all about trying to figure out how to make it through the day instead of how can I be of service to anyone else? So, in this time of technology just bursting out, please have faith in what we do. Have faith in yourself as an important part of this equation to help people connect. There's so many people that are so lonely and needing support that want to understand how to feel their body, want to understand how to feel their breath, want to understand how to connect with other people, and then how to be of service and how to feel like you're not alone in this world and it's not quite so scary. So that's what we're doing here. And I've been getting asked so much lately, Amy, what do you think the future of yoga therapy is? And I've contemplated this for a good year now. And every time I think about how are we going to get yoga therapies into the hospitals? How are we going to get more yoga therapy research? How are we going to get jobs? How are we going to get insured, the codes? How are we going to get licensed? Every time I go there's just wall after wall after wall. And I'm sorry to say, I think we have to really get out of that paradigm and start thinking of new ideas. Very soon, you will see the new jobs report, meaning that people at Maryland University of Integrative Health, not myself, but other people, have been studying the field of yoga therapy and jobs, what it's looking like for the future. And I'm so sorry to say, but not much has changed in the last 10 years. Not much has changed in 10 years. Like they did it, many years ago, and now they've re-upped it. We haven't seen any growth. And I don't know about you all, but I personally and everyone I know has worked so hard to spread the message of yoga therapy in terms of helping to promote more jobs, helping to run businesses, helping to figure out how to get into healthcare. And I hesitate to even say this, but I'm going to because I finally feel like I need to take a stand. I went to this 90th celebration yesterday and saw what humanity needs to be. And I also had a good long talk this weekend with my dear friend Arun Deva, who he and I are two peas in a pod. And we talk about these things quite often. And I won't say what Arun thinks. I'll just say what I think as a result of the conversation that yoga therapy, yoga, and Ayurveda are thriving when we stop thinking about, I have to make a living doing this. I have to get a job. I have to get licensed. I have to get codes. I have to get insurance. I have to get into hospital. Like all those doors are pretty blocked to us right now. And with the current administration, I think, if we just take research alone, there's so many people getting their grants cut or they're not able to get new grants to do research in this area. But for many other reasons, a lot of what we do is not being supported by healthcare, by the government, and all the places that we've been trying to get into. And so it occurs to me, what if we just went back to the heart of it? What if we nourished ourselves, our heart, our spiritual heart, our mental, emotional heart, our relationships? This is what yoga and Ayurveda were designed for. They've been on earth for thousands of years, helping people to suffer less, to feel more connected, to feel more regulated, to feel good inside, to feel human, to have this human experience so that consciousness itself can experience what it feels like to be in a human body. We call that Purusha. Purusha wants this experience of wow, what does it feel like to be human? And so, why don't we tear it down to the studs? Why don't we go back to that? Apparently, we've gotten off track. Apparently, we've tried to make it into something that we want for safety and security and survival. And she's not having it. I say she, I mean, the spirit of Ayurveda, the spirit of yoga, she's not having it. It's not to say that it can't be that one day, but I think we're pushing too hard, too fast. Can we take a step back and think about what it was meant to do, which is to help people to suffer less? First and foremost, doing it yourself daily to feel it, to be it, to experience it. And then, of course, sharing it with others. And people say, but I can't make a living. It's been a long time coming for me to say this because it's painful for me to say, but maybe it can't be your sole source of income. I'm so sorry. I had to work 25 years full-time as a college professor and do my yoga with my weekends. Like, maybe that's where we're at right now. And all of this pushing to get it to be where it can't be yet is not only hurting the field, but it's also hurting us as humans. We have forgotten the core essence of what we're doing here. And I would even argue that a lot of us as yoga and Ayurveda professionals are not even practicing. We're not even doing daily sadhana. I mean, it sounds crazy to say, but it's like a car mechanic who is not taking care of their own car because they're so busy with all the other cars. Or it's like a hairdresser that has not had time to give themselves a cut and a color because their schedule is so booked, or they're out there marketing on Instagram for new people to come. It's just this safety, this survival, this what we call ahankara is driving us, but it's driving us away from the heart of yoga, in my opinion. So that's another thing to think about. And as we go into season 9, which again is from July or August until the end of the year in 2025, can we think about that? Can we think about what it means to be human, how to connect deeply, how to feel safe, how to build community, how to do things in your town that matter? Small, tiny things. Can you smile at someone? Can you open the door? Can you not get road rage when somebody cuts in front of you? Can you help someone carry some groceries? Can you just go and be with someone who's feeling lonely or sad without an agenda? That's what we have to bring it back to. That's why we're here. And see what happens from that place. That's a totally different seed than I need to make money off this. And I know I'm going to get pushback on this. I do. I've said it on Facebook a few weeks ago. And what people came back with, which in my opinion was very cynical, was, that sounds like you want us to work for free. No, maybe you just do yoga because you love yoga and you have a different job. Like, full stop. We're not asking you to work for free. We're saying give of yourself like the Tibetans were. Be that close to the essence. And if that means we have to go get another job, we will. Many of you know, 6 months ago, I had decided I was getting a different job outside of yoga so that I could support my family and that I would do yoga on the side. I'm so grateful that it didn't turn out that way and I did end up getting a job in yoga, but I had made the decision. And so it's painful, especially when we've paid so much and spent so much time learning how to be a great yoga teacher, yoga therapist, Ayurvedic practitioner. But I'm going to say something that's maybe a little unpopular, and that is, did you not benefit from that? Was that not the highlight of your life to get that training? Did you not feel happy every single moment of that training? Did you not feel like you received something from the gods that most of humanity throughout all of time and space has never gotten to hear and learn and become? Like, to me, I remember the early days in India. I wasn't thinking about how am I going to make a living off this. I was grateful that someone was willing to tell me these precious, precious teachings that were changing my life, changing the trajectory of my life. Can we go back to that? I know it's a painful place to go back to, but can we go back to that? So as we move into season nine, the rest of this year, and you hear these stories of being human, these stories of how yoga helped each and every person that you listen to suffer less. Can you get back to the essence of that? I know that our safety and survival and security is up for us big time. And many of you may say, no, I cannot get back to that. I would say, let's go get a job. Let's go try to figure out how to support ourselves because this ain't it. At this time, it's really, really hard to make a living. And I think the jobs report said something like 4% of yoga therapists are making like a really good living doing this. 4%. So I don't say that to crush anyone's hopes or dreams or upset you. I say that to say we've been struggling for a decade and we haven't made progress on that front. I personally, I'm going back to the spiritual heart. I'm going back to the mental, emotional salve to help people suffer less. Whatever it takes, I'm bringing it back down to the studs for myself. And if I have to have another job, that's what I'm going to do because I don't want to imprint my safety, survival, security needs on top of these beautiful teachings if I don't have to. It may sound easy for me to say, but I did this for 25 years. I prioritized making a living and then doing some yoga on the side. And really making it that sacred ritual that it is. So, whew, tough talk today, right? So, it kind of brings me to what I've been contemplating for season 10, which is starting in January of 2026. I'm already going to be putting out a call to schedule people. I always schedule people almost 6 months to a year in advance to be on the podcast. I know that sounds crazy to some of you, but that's to get in people's schedules. That's what I have to do. I'm going to do a 15-month series on the eight limbs of yoga to bring it back home. And so starting in January 2026, anyone who wants to be on the podcast, you have to find the topic that I've already chosen that you might be willing to talk about. So I'm going to go through some of those topics right now. And remember, if I say that January is when we're going to release this podcast, you and I would have to record it prior to that. Okay. So if you hear one of these topics that you want to be in on and be the guest in 2026, you just have to email me and tell me, hey, has anyone chosen that one? Because I really want that one. And it will be a specific topic on a specific day, just so you know. And if people don't sign up, I'll just do solo episodes on them. All right. So in January, we're going to start with what does it mean, Chitta Vritti Nirodha, the definition of yoga, specifically with respect to the autonomic nervous system, to the Indian philosophy of the mind. What does it mean to have stillness in the mind? Why do we begin with this idea of the mind? And looking at what does it mean to be regulated mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually? How does ancient wisdom meet modern neuroscience? And how does this play out from feeling very restless and anxious to a place of clarity and calm? So that's going to be our topic. And we're just kind of setting up the eight limbs of yoga. And then the next month in February, we're going to be talking about Abhyasa and Vairagyam. Abhyasa meaning a daily sadhana practice, which then leads to this ability to let go into something larger than ourselves. And specifically, how does that promote transformation? How does it rewire your brain, maybe even with neuroplasticity? What does it mean to let go and surrender? And then how do we have kind of a consistent daily practice that's sustainable for us in March? And again, you're all invited to be part of these topics and be the guest. So as I say these, you can be writing them down and checking off, like, ha, I think I could talk about that one. In March of 2026, we're going to talk about kleshas, which are the causes of suffering, the root things, the fear, the attachment, the aversion, the misidentification or misperception, the ego identification, that those are the root of human suffering, but also the emotional imprints, the fear, the shame, the memories. And again, how does that play out with neuroscience? And what does it mean to have avidya, to not know what you don't know and to admit that to yourself? And then what is the path to freedom, to mental, emotional, spiritual freedom? How can we release the kleshas and find more spaciousness? In April of 2026, the invitation is now out. What are the eight limbs of yoga? And this is the whole 15-month period that we're doing this. It all bases around that. So January, February, March were kind of the warm-up. And now we get to, okay, what are the eight limbs and how do they map to our mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical systems in terms of health? And how can we step by step use the eight limbs to build resilience and to help our systems recover? And then carrying it forward, because those are just on the road to spiritual growth and transformation. It's all one road that we're on. But for some of us, we're using it for healing. Some are using it for more health. Other people are using it more for kind of a spiritual way of being in the world. Next, we'll come to May, and we'll be taking a whole month to look at the yamas, the five principles of how can we be together socially. It's the first limb of yoga. What does co-regulation even mean? What does non-harming mean? How can we look at the yamas as a tool for socially interacting together? How can we use the yamas for a tool of reimagining what it means to have good boundaries and good communication and telling the truth in a way that people can hear it? And then in June, we'll go to the niyamas, which are all about personal disciplines. And isn't it interesting that the social disciplines are the foundation for personal disciplines? When I think about what was happening with the Tibetans yesterday and what I observed, this nomadic community that has their families surrounding them and supporting them and holding them, they are part of a system. They're not out there on their own doing their own niyamas. They're part of something larger than themselves. The community is as important or more important than their personal disciplines. But as we look at our personal disciplines, you know, what does it mean to cleanse our mind and our body? What does it mean to have internal safety as a human? What does it mean to be disciplined? What does it mean to surrender? And how can we have discipline and surrender? And then what are the daily rituals that heal the nervous system from the inside out and heal the mind and heal the body and heal the spirit from the inside out? The next topic will be asana. We'll do a whole month on interoception and how to feel from the inside of your body, how to find safety in the stillness and rewire your body for feeling safe. How can we use perception, internal perception, and neuroscience to help us reshape our body, maybe even with respect to chronic pain or autoimmune disease? And then Can we use movement to change how our mind functions? Wow, can we use movement to change how our mind functions? Can you see why this all took me several months to come up with? I wanted the landscape of the eight limbs, but I really want to drill down into each limb from an ancient perspective, but also from the perspective of modern science. In August, we'll go to pranayama and we'll talk about things like vagal tone, breath ratios, how to use your breath to have a well-regulated nervous system. How can we use the breath to move from hyperarousal into homeostasis? And how do we use the breath as a portal into presence? Wow, I love these topics. This is going to be a great year. I hope you're as excited as I am. All of this is going to be on the podcast because you all are going to sign up for these topics and say you're willing to talk about them. I hope. If not, I'll be doing a lot of solo episodes. So the only way is for you to volunteer. All right. Then we go to September. And again, we're 2026. We're way ahead. I plan out. Pratyahara. What does it mean to draw your senses and your mind inward so that you don't have sensory overwhelm? I think, especially with our phones, so many of us are having sensory overwhelm. How do we be present in the moment with what we're feeling inside? How do we learn to turn our attention inward? Is there any way we can use our senses to help us heal? Seeing, feeling, touching, tasting, smelling, hearing. Is there space for the senses to help us heal, or should we turn off the senses and just stay inward? And then once we get our senses and our mind turned inward, how do we make sure we're not avoiding life and just living in a cave and not actually interacting with life? And then I guess I could go on to the last few months, but I feel like it's getting so far out there. We will have a whole month on dharana. We'll have a whole month on dhyanam. We'll have a whole month on samadhi. As I said, this is a 15-month plan. So if any of those topics sounds interesting to you, tell me so I can get you on the calendar. And I'm really looking forward to season 10. I know we have a great season ahead of us, but I just wanted to put that out there. What's going to happen next year? So, thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoy season 8. We're coming into a lot more storytelling, and it's really been a pleasure to be human with you and to be here now with each other, being present to each other. And thank you for listening to the podcast. It's one of my great joys. All right. We'll see you next time. Thanks again. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We appreciate you as our listeners because without you, there would be no Yoga Therapy Hour. It's your comments, your calls, your emails, your texts of support and well wishes and affirmations that keeps us going. So don't feel hesitant to give us a review if you've been enjoying the podcast. Go wherever it is that you listen, find the review section, and let people know how much you love the Yoga Therapy Hour. It's a small thing that you could do for us that would help spread the word of goodness, benevolence, and help us help all the people out there to suffer less. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.